From NPR News, this is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. When the polls close on the night of November 4th, this man will have already made history.
If you'll stand with me and fight with me and give me your vote, then I promise you, we will win this general election, and together we'll change this country and we will change the world. God bless you. God bless the United States of America. Let's get to work.
On August 28th, Senator Barack Obama became the first African-American to accept the presidential nomination of a major party. Exactly 45 years earlier, Martin Luther King Jr. made his iconic speech from the steps of the Lincoln Memorial.
I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today.
So how did Barack Obama realize Martin Luther King's dream? And how did he rise so far, so fast? Tomorrow we revisit the political career of Republican presidential candidate Senator John McCain. Today we examine Senator Barack Obama's political rise. We aired a version of this piece by NPR's Tony Cox during the Democratic National Convention in August.
I chose to run for president at this moment in history because I believe deeply that we cannot solve the challenges of our time unless we solve them together.
To better understand how we arrived at this political landmark, we look back to the beginning of Obama's political life. It began to take shape when he was elected as the first black president of the Harvard Law Review in 1990. Charles Ogletree is a professor at Harvard Law and was Obama's mentor on campus.
Barack Obama was actually always someone who would listen, and he didn't always agree with what I had to say, and I didn't always agree with what he had to say. But the important thing was that as a young man who came to Harvard Law School, whose father was not in his life, who only knew him in a passing way, it was important for him to see other mentors and role models. And I was very happy as an African-American faculty member, as a father, as a parent, to spend time with him talking about some of his wishes and some of his dreams.
Following Harvard, Obama returned to Chicago and his community organizing roots, where Chicago Tribune columnist Clarence Page says Obama began to cultivate his political connections.
After he came back to Chicago after Harvard Law School, he put those contacts to good use and really worked his way up through his first Chicago independent political circles, and then he worked his way into the inner circle of the old organization, what we always called the machine back in those days when it really operated like a machine.
It was that machine that gave Obama his first crack at elected office. In 1996, Illinois State Senator Alice Palmer urged Obama to run for her seat because she was leaving it to run for Congress. But before Election Day arrived, the newcomer found himself in the uncomfortable position of challenging Palmer as well. Here again is Clarence Page of the Chicago Tribune.
As it happened, she was defeated by Jesse Jackson Jr., who won that congressional seat. She turned around and asked Barack to step aside so she could run for her old seat again. Barack did not. In Chicago's traditional political etiquette, a lot of folks called it dirty pool.
It would not be Obama's last clash with the Chicago machine. In 2000, as a state senator, he sought the congressional seat of longtime incumbent and former Black Party Panther member Bobby Rush. Obama was trounced, Congressman Rush.
First of all, he was running against me. I was the incumbent, had been elected, I think, for three or four times prior to him running against me.
Rush says Obama was viewed as someone who had not paid his dues.
You know, his ambition kind of collided with my history and my involvement, my participation, not only in the civil rights movement, but my tenure here in the Congress. And I think that that's what collided, and he lost as a result of that.
Over the next 4 years, Obama would work hard to repair his image and to ensure that that disconnect would not cost him another election. Melissa Harris-Lacewell is a professor of politics and African-American studies at Princeton. Prior to that, she taught at the University of Chicago when Obama was a member of the faculty. She also attended Trinity United Church of Christ with the Obamas.
What Barack had managed to do over those 4 years from 2000 to 2004 was he'd learned to be in different places, speaking to folks with lots of different kinds of interests. And he also learned that his personal narrative could connect with folks that were surprised that they connected with Barack Obama.
Obama's political fortunes rapidly changed, and in 2004, he was able to successfully challenge for the United States Senate seat vacated by Republican Peter Fitzgerald. Obama defeated Republican Alan Keyes in a landslide. It was during that race that Obama first came to national prominence and delivered the keynote address at the Democratic National Convention in Boston. It secured his status as a rising star within the party.
A black America and a white America and Latino America and Asian America. There's the United States of America.
Again, Melissa Harris-Lacewell.
So what I suspect is that for many Americans, both across lines of race, but also class and also ideology, they look at Barack Obama and see all kinds of different things.
Obama's broad appeal has been both a blessing and a curse, in part because he is a groundbreaking politician. He's biracial, with a white American mother and a black African father, was raised by a single parent, and received an Ivy League education. Harris Lacewell says it is a mixture that Americans react to differently.
Clearly, for some African Americans, Barack Obama represents the culmination of the civil rights movement. The opportunity finally to reach the highest levels of government. For some white Americans, this is also the culmination of the civil rights movement, the idea of being in a multiracial coalition behind a black leader. But for other whites, it is incidental that Barack Obama is black, or they might even argue that Barack Obama is not particularly black.
Despite overwhelming support from African Americans, there remains a vocal constituency, both black and white, who are more concerned about his political inexperience than they are impressed by his promise of change. Count among them Ron Christie, a political consultant who was a special assistant to President George W. Bush.
One of the things that concerns me the most about Senator Obama becoming the next president of the United States is that at this juncture, I'm not quite sure who he is. He has been a member of the United States Senate for less than 3 years. He hasn't amassed a very formidable record. He discusses working in a bipartisan manner and hopes to bring change to Washington, but yet he's been one of the more partisan and one of the more divisive figures in the United States Senate. So regardless of his ideology, regardless of his background, we just don't know who he is.
Like he once did in Chicago, Barack Obama has focused his presidential bid on refining and more clearly defining his image. One of the first tests was the controversy over the incendiary racial comments by Reverend Jeremiah Wright. Obama responded twice, first with a national address on the racial complexities in America, and then, following a second outburst by Wright, Obama called a news conference the next day to more clearly distance himself from racial politics.
His comments were not only divisive and destructive, but I believe that they end up giving comfort to those who prey on hate, and I believe that they do not portray accurately the perspective of the black church. They certainly don't portray accurately my values and beliefs.
The campaign trail in presidential politics is full of landmines, and while some see Obama as transcending race, there have been other serious obstacles from his past. One of the more damaging is his one-time relationship with convicted Chicago real estate developer Tony Resco. Resco and Obama were involved in a land deal that led to the purchase of Obama's Hyde Park home. Here again is Clarence Page of the Chicago Tribune.
I bet Obama himself would say that his biggest mistake was getting involved with Tony Resco in a property deal especially. You know, he can't explain it away as far as a matter of judgment is concerned.
Since that time, Senator Obama has also faced questions about his relationship to his former pastor, the Reverend Jeremiah Wright, and the 60s-era radical-turned-professor William Ayers. Despite these and other controversies, the senator secured the Democratic nomination for president in one of the closest primary races in party history. For NPR News, I'm Tony Cox.
Today, while Senator Obama is leading in most national polls, recent history tells us that presidential elections can have last-minute twists and unpredictable outcomes. Nonetheless, we asked Chicago Tribune columnist Clarence Page to imagine what might happen if Senator Obama won the highest office in the land.
Racism is not going to evaporate, as some people tend to imply. But it will be a great day for America, first of all, because it will be, and not just America, but the world. The world is watching, literally, here, because it'll be such a clear indicator that race is that much less of an impediment for the aspirations of different people around the world. That's number one. Number two, it will clarify something about black leadership in America. There's certainly folks who say, well, this will put Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton out of business. No, it won't. As Al Sharpton has said, you know, when Thurgood Marshall went to the Supreme Court, they didn't put Martin Luther King out of business. There are still problems involving race in this country as around the rest of the world. But what it will mean, though, is that I think for young people coming up, especially when they look and see, you know, what kind of opportunities do I have, they will see that color is just that much less of a barrier in and of itself. So other than that, if Barack Obama wins, he faces the same problems any president would in these times of great economic crisis and military crisis, diplomatic crises around the world. You might say the only thing worse than losing the race for the president this year is winning it, because it means you're going to have one headache after another.
Tomorrow, we look at the personal history and political career of Republican presidential nominee, Senator John McCain.